Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time.
O'clock on Friday, so hey, we might as well knock out another edition of Sports Time Radio. I'm the Big Jack, and I did say Friday, even though he just kind of did make it under the gun, but we won't hold that against
him. Start spreading the news.
And you cut it kind of close there, but you did make it, Stu. How you doing?
Boy, I didn't realize there was only 30 seconds left. I have a joke about that, but I better not repeat it on the air.
Yeah, you better be careful there. All right, anyways, if you'd like to call in and talk to Stu or I, or maybe both of us, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Anything else you need? Head on over to sportstimeradio.com. Now, you know, the blogs go up on Wednesdays and Saturdays, so hopefully something will be popping up there sometime early tomorrow morning. You just never know. Of course, while you're at sportstimeradio.com, you hit that link, you follow it over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. If you could like it while you're over there, well, hey, that would greatly be appreciated. That's right, greatly appreciated. That's better. What else? Oh, yeah, we got the Twitter feed. You can't forget about the Twitter feed. Now, you should know what this is by now. It's at Sports Time Radio. I mean, what else would it be? Sadly, we still don't have Stu on Twitter, but I am out there at Burke Time, and if you want to ship me something that you want me to tell Stu, I will gladly do that. Just try to keep it clean. So, all right. I'm trying to categorize this because one of the things we've talked about when a player opts out is, When were we going to get our first, like, star player, you know, actual superstar player to opt out? David Price opted out earlier this week. Now, he's a big-name player, but I don't think I would categorize him as a superstar anymore. Maybe at one point in time when he was in Tampa Bay and winning the Cy Young Award and stuff like that. But today we had another one, and you're going to have to – kind of help me how to categorize this, because Buster Posey has decided that he's going to opt out of this season. Apparently him and his wife just adopted twins that were born premature. The kind of travel involved going back and forth to the ballpark and the road and stuff, he didn't want to take the chance. So he's going to sit out 2020. Is Buster Posey considered a superstar in your mind? I mean, he rookie of the year, MVP, obviously, you know, multiple time all-star. He has won 3 World Series. But, you know, as of late, his numbers really haven't been that great the last couple years. Is he a superstar to you?
Not anymore. At one time I would say yes. I saw the news also a few minutes ago, and my first thought was that at one time I would consider him one of the superstars in baseball, but certainly not the last few years, although he's still an excellent ball player.
Yeah, because, you know, when I looked at, you know, I saw, like, just his general numbers, and I thought, oh, maybe, you know, he had an injury-plagued season or something, because his numbers were kind of down, but he actually played in 114 games last year. Only managed 7 homers, drove in just 38 runs, and hit a career-low 257. So, yeah, I mean, just a terrible season for a player like Posey. I mean, he is a career 302 hitter. So he's been a very good hitter. And, you know, normally he's a double-digit homer guy, except for these last 2 years. You know, I mentioned he had 7 last year. He only had 5 the year before. And for whatever reason, be it the Giants offense or what, he is just not driving anybody in.
No, of course, the Giants have a pretty bad team. Now, my question is this. You said you played in 114 games last year, which means that I don't think they would have rested him all that much, so maybe he had some injuries. During the 114 games he played, how many did he catch, if any?
I can tell you that, actually. He caught in 101 of those 114 games, and he started 96 of them at catcher.
Well, that could be your answer right there. He's not a youngster anymore. He's been around a while, and that, as you well know from having done it in college, the catching position will wear and tear on you after a while, and there are very, very few who didn't regress during the course of their year as a catcher, catcher.
You know, I guess it's just the point that it was such a sharp drop-off. You know, I mean, I don't even know if you could call it a progressive decline from, you know, where he went or where he was the last year. And, I know he's one of those guys that he's always seems to be dinged up, no matter what it is. And, I mean, obviously I'm not counting the collision where he broke his leg. That wasn't dinged up. That was getting seriously injured. But, yeah, I just don't know. You start to, kind of wonder. I mean, he's had a full 10-year career.
How old is he? How old is he? Do you know off the top?
He's 33.
And is that getting up there especially for being a catcher? Maybe not so much for an outfielder or first baseman. As a catcher, you think his skills are starting to diminish and it's starting to show at the plate?
That's always a possibility. But 33 isn't that old. I would think he would have a few more years left before, it would just kind of start to all go to hell.
Well, there have been a lot of catchers, I guess, through the course that had great careers and didn't taper off maybe until they were, 35, 36, 36, 37, in that area, not 33. But each person is different, and that wear and tear really can accumulate. As you pointed out, he's had a lot of injuries throughout his career, too, even count the broken leg. But, I mean, he's been dinged up quite a few times. It has to take its toll eventually.
So, yeah, and, I don't know, it just seems, because I keep trying to go back to, is he a superstar? I don't know if I buy it anymore. And he is one of the players that I really like. He's always been a guy that I've kind of rooted for. I don't know if I drop him in that superstar category. And
well, not now.
I think even
not now.
His
best days are behind him, don't you think? His best days are behind him. Look at how many homers he hit the last 2 years combined.
So, yeah, and, I think more curiously now is it leaves the Giants with veteran backup Rob Brantley as the guy that people actually have penciled in as the starter. I can't figure out any reason at all why they wouldn't go with Joey Bart. They drafted him a couple years ago. He's been making his way through the minor league system. I think at this point he's, even though I think he's 23, I think he's going to be 24 soon. If you're going to go with a guy, with the way everything's going this year, doesn't he have to play? I mean, like I said, they're looking at Rob Brantley and Tyler Heineman as their catching duo. Wouldn't you rather run your rookie out there and see what you got?
You would think so, especially when this team is probably the last place team in their division under normal circumstances anyway.
Yeah, because it just doesn't make any sense when I look at it to see – you know, Rob Brantley getting a, you know, getting a start. And I mean, you know, to be fair to Rob Brantley, he's found a way to hang around a you know, a pretty relatively long time. I don't believe he spent every year at the major league level, but he's managed, and I'm going to double check it here. It looks like he's on year 7 or 8. His first year was 2012. So this will be his 8th year bouncing back and forth between the majors and the minors. And he's never played more than 67 games, and he's a career .229 hitter.
Yeah,
so
I was going to say that his batting average is pretty low. Of course.
Yeah, this guy can't be your everyday catcher for 60 games.
Well, truth be told, though, over the course of the years, I guess it's such a difficult position. There's been a lot of catchers who have hung on a long, long time with batting averages actually worse than his, much worse, below 200, and they seem to have stuck around.
Yeah, but normally those guys offer other things. They're big power hitters, or they're great defenders. They handle the pitching staff real well. Brantley doesn't have that kind of reputation. He's got 7 career home runs with a season high of 3 in his first year in 2012. So I don't think that fits into any of those categories. And I mean, obviously, you know, when you've got Buster Posey on your roster, in a short season like we're having, you probably figure your number one catcher is probably going to catch 50 games. So you're only looking at a guy, you know, catching maybe 10 games for you. That's no big deal. You know, maybe he double switches in a late inning kind of situation, you know, to give your regular guy a break, or you get your regular guy out of there in a blowout, so you save some innings. So yeah, you know, you weren't looking at that many appearances, but now, you know, when this guy elevates the number one, even if they platoon him with, you know, Heinemann, which I don't even know if I'm pronouncing that right, because Brantley's left-handed and the other guy's right-handed, the lefty is still going to get the majority of the starts. You know, in a season like this, I mean, even the Giants, if they get off to the right start, could be a playoff contender. Just as weird as this is.
You never know when a playoff team can get hot because of the 60-game schedule. And by the way, I still have reservations about this season actually playing out to its conclusion, but that's another issue. I'm concerned about it, actually. Let's put it that way. But that's another, as I said, another issue. And yeah, they can get hot, but I don't see it happening. There's too many other teams that are better than them in their division. But stranger things have happened. Now everything is up for grabs. Sam, would you be? Let's assume that they played a full 60 games, everybody. The playoffs go as scheduled. You look for a surprise team to wind up winning it all because of the short schedule?
You know, I don't know about winning it all, because they're still going to have to win a 7-game series. And I think that's where the issue would lie, is could a team, you know, randomly manage to win 4 out of 7 from a team that is much more talented than it. I don't think that would happen, but I wouldn't be surprised to see, you know, a team that maybe nobody's counting on, and all of a sudden we look up and, you know, they grab one of those extra playoff spots, or they do get hot, and you know, you're like, oh crap, you know, look at this team, you know, the Pittsburgh Pirates or the Kansas City Royals, or, you know, maybe even a team like the Blue Jays. You know, they just kind of get out of the gate and they get rolling, and, you know, that stuff can be contagious. You know, and if you can get out fast and hang on, maybe you grab a playoff spot.
Yeah, maybe I can bet a few foul on the Miami team making it into the playoffs. And I'm sure I can catch big time.
I did see today that Pecota put out their predictions, and I didn't look them over thoroughly, but I did hear somebody mention that with the way they predicted the season, every NL Central team makes the playoffs except the Pirates.
Well, that possibility. We know the Pirates are the last place team in that division, but I imagine they projected each team winning around, what, 32, 33 games in that area?
Yeah. Yeah, they had everybody right in that area. And if I remember correctly, it's Reds, Cubs, Cardinals, Brewers is what they had rolling out.
Well, I'm a little surprised at that. I knew that the Reds are a much improved team, probably one of the most improved teams in the majors. But are they good enough to beat out the Cardinals and Milwaukee?
So, yeah, you know, again, it's going to be such a crapshoot. Who knows? You know, is it going to be, you know, are they going to be right? You know, will it, who knows? You know, I mean, they're, to be fair, they're rarely correct. Their predictions are always very low on the win side for whatever reason. It's just the way it's done. So,
did they pick anybody for 40 wins, like the Dodgers maybe?
You know, I didn't see it. That's what I was looking for here, see if I could find the updated numbers here. But it looks like they keep running videos at me, and I don't want to kind of sit here and look through a video while we're doing the podcast because I have a hard enough time paying attention to what I'm doing as it is. So I'll have to see if I can maybe hunt something down that's written. Maybe this one is better for me, and I'll have a shot for you and I to actually look at it here. So.
Yeah, maybe they're only going to go up to 37, 38 for the top level of the number of victories.
Yeah, here they have this is the way here. The NL Central happens to be the first division. The Reds they have them at 32.8. The Cubs are 31.6. The Cardinals are 30.7. The Brewers are a dead 30 on the nose for wins, and the Pirates clock in at 25.9. They gave me a projected total for, though. That's kind of strange.
Well, that's pretty close, right down the middle, the way they have it. It's a toss-up.
So, yeah, here you go. This is a little better. This is a better one. The Dodgers have the highest win total at 38.4. They have the Yankees at 36.4 and the Astros at 36.1. Those are the top three that they have going on right now.
Well, that's no surprise, really, when you look at it. Look at the makeup of those teams. That I was going to say, I was thinking maybe that they would take a flyer and put the Dodgers in at 40 wins, but
well, you know,
maybe.
Yeah,
22
thirds of
their games,
that's
a lot.
So, but yeah, you know, we'll see how it shakes out. They actually have the White Sox clocking in at 30.8, which put them in third place in the Central. But it does look like they would, even with the expanded playoffs, it looks like they would just be on the outside of it. So.
Well, besides the Twins, who are they picking ahead of them?
The Indians again. It's basically the same. It's pretty much just like last year. It's Twins, Indians, White Sox, Tigers, and Royals.
Yeah, I guess there's no upsets there. And although it seems to me that the Indians are on their way down now as the contender over the next couple of years, the way I see it.
Yeah, oddly looking at it, the American League standings that they have are, I believe, exactly in the same order as last year, except they have the Angels in third and the Rangers in fourth, which is a flip-flop there. Otherwise, everything is exactly the same. So they didn't go out on any limbs there.
No.
It's
very difficult. How about the Nationals?
You know, the National League is, you know, they changed it up a little. They have Washington just squeaking out the division over the Mets with the Braves in third, the Phillies in fourth, and then, of course, the Marlins in fifth. Oddly, the Phillies win. They actually have the Phillies as an under 500 team. So that, you know, that's kind of an interesting prediction. And then, you know, out west, the Dodgers are the only team they have over 500. Everybody else is listed as an under 500 team.
Yeah, it's extremely difficult to make an accurate position prediction on a 60 game schedule. It's very difficult. You know that there's going to be a surprise team or two in there when it's all said and done.
Yeah, it's going to work out. You know, like I said, somebody is going to get hot right out of the gate, and you know they're going to go like 15-5 or 20-5, you know, and it's just going to be out of control, and then there's just going to be no way to, you know, keep them out. So it just kind of depends which team it is and who can get it rolling.
Yeah, like you said, the team that gets hot out of the gate is going to have a great advantage in this season.
So yeah, you know the way and obviously the other way it's worked out is you don't want to be hot to start so you can get in, or you want to be hot to end it so you can go rolling into the playoffs, on a good roll. So, but yeah, it's. We'll have to see here. I mean, we're getting close, couple weeks out. We'll see if they can keep things together enough to actually get this fiasco of a season in. We'll see.
Yeah, I got to tell you an amusing story, by the way, relating to baseball. I actually emailed Marquis the other day. Hey, what's going on with negotiations with Comcast? And your age is optional. What the hell? I put my age down, 82. So I got a reply today, and my username is 82. That's my username, 82. And they gave me a real great, it was a nice, pleasant email, which said, basically, we're working on it.
Yeah. Yeah, and I guess that doesn't surprise me. I mean, you know, what else are they going to be able to tell you? So.
Yeah, but I got a kick out of my username on Marquee.
You know, would it change then when you had your birthday next year, or would you just stay at 82?
Right. If they kept me on file, would they switch me over to 83 or not? I don't know.
Ooh.
I might be perpetually 82.
Well, you know, hey, I guess nothing wrong with that, right? Better than being, how old are you? So.
Like I always tell everybody, it beats the alternative.
Yeah. So, you know, that's funny. Yeah, too bad they didn't tell you anything. It would have been nice to.
No.
They're
doing their best.
Figure something
They're
out.
Doing their best to get it solved by the 24th. Yeah, 2 weeks, right? 2 weeks from today.
Yeah.
The season actually
2 weeks
starts.
From today. So, yeah, we get rolling.
I think the Cubs are on national TV this Saturday. A strange start, a noon start. Will they play the Brewers on either ESPN or another one of those national channels, I think? I may have read that the other day.
Well, I know for opening night, you know, the good old Mickey Mouse Network is going to have 3 games. The MLB Network is going to have 2. But Cubs and the Brewers are the second game on the Mickey Mouse Network that day. And then they're the first game on Fox on Saturday.
Yeah. Now some of those games, and probably not the game on Fox, but the previous game, that could be blacked out in the local market area. I'm not sure how that works. It's always really confusing because sometimes you'll notice that you go last year, for example, there were several times when the Cubs are on the local cable channel here and supposed to be on ESPN or MLB, and they showed different content. It was blacked out here. But sometimes they show the games also. I can never figure out what distinction they make when they either show the game on an alternate channel or black it out.
So, yeah, you know, and I know, you know, for these first couple games, they're going all out. You know, I mentioned the Mickey Mouse Network has 3 the first night. Fox has 3 on that Saturday, plus 1 on FS1. So Fox will be carrying four games that very first Saturday.
That's a lot.
TBS jumps in on Sunday with their game, and then ESPN has a Sunday night. The Mickey Mouse Network, they have a Sunday night doubleheader, which is very rare.
Well, they're hoping that everybody's going to get on the bandwagon. I'm wondering, though, if it's overkill on the network's part.
Yeah, well, you know, but you also got to look at it as, you know, they're probably to the point where they're just so excited to have a live sport to show, you know, that they're going to get it out there. So.
Yeah, and then, of course, we have basketball coming pretty soon, too, don't we?
Maybe, to everything right now is just, you know, we think, but, you know, basketball's not till the very end of the month.
Right, that's correct. Have they established a date yet for hockey, by the way? Have they officially started a date for hockey? Not yet, right?
I thought they mentioned something, but maybe it's not official yet. You know, they were talking the end of the month as well, but I don't know if there's been an official, you know, hey, yeah, it says, oh, no, that's for next year. Okay, that won't happen. So,
yeah.
But, yeah, it doesn't look anything official yet. But, you know, while we were on baseball, I wanted to ask you this because this sounded – pretty interesting to me here. And, you know, they're using that, you know, I'm just going to describe it as, again, is that incredibly stupid extra inning rule where you get to, like, I think it's the 11th inning and you put a runner on first. Now, say you're the home team and you get out of the top of the 11th without giving up any runs. You manage to leave that runner stranded at second. So now when you come up, there's your guy at second. There's nobody out with a runner at second. Don't you almost automatically bunt that guy to third where he's only 90 feet away and can score on some kind of fluke? You know, Dan didn't really like it. He didn't think it was something that would happen. You know, and I know with sabermetrics, bunting is one of the most horrible things you can do. But, man, it seems to make a lot of sense to me to move that guy right up, and then you got two shots or just some oddity, you know, wild pitch, whatever, that could bring him in.
You would think so, but, boy, I would say that bunting looks like a dying art in Major League Baseball over the last few years.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, it's incredibly dead, and especially now with pitchers not hitting. You know, I mean, it's just, you know, I don't know if we would see one, but it makes so, you know, I know we're not going to get a bunch of these games, but it makes so much sense to me for a team to win the game, and especially in a season like this, because the, you know, the percentages of a guy scoring from third have to be a lot better than a percentage of the guy scoring from second.
Sure. Could be a wild pitch or pass ball. Anything can happen. But I think you'll be surprised. I think there will be some bunting involved when there's a runner on second in that with that scenario. I think they will try to do something to get the runner to third base. Of course, if you have a smart hitter up there, he doesn't have to necessarily bunt. He can hit to the right side. He can hit to the right side of the diamond towards second base and purposely get himself out and get the runner into third base to win the game.
Do we have any of those hitters anymore?
Oh, there's one or two available, but not many, unfortunately.
Yeah,
that's another dying art. When they used to be a thing. We get congratulated in the dugout. I've seen this many times when a player would purposely get himself out and advance the runner from second to third, and they would slap the guy in the back and congratulate him. But I don't think you see too much of that anymore.
Guy just puts his helmet in the rack and goes and sits down because he didn't hit a home run.
That's exactly right. And, some of the interesting strategy in years past are taking a back seat to what's going on now with the long ball and everything else. And that doesn't do much for the game. But, of course, I'm a purist, and as are you. And of course, today's fans want to see the long ball, want to see the home run, no matter what the situation is in the ball game.
Yeah, they want to see all that stuff, and then that slows the game down, and then they complain that the games are too long.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
yeah.
You have to laugh about they actually did reduce the average time last season, regular season, but it wasn't by very much, I don't think. What is it, 4 or 5 minutes maybe at best?
Yeah. No, yeah, you know, I mean, they've managed to cut the time down a little since they decided, you know, that was important, and, you know, it was something they needed to do, was to, you know, to get out there and figure out how to, you know, how to do this. But, yeah, I mean, you're never, you know, you're never going to get baseball down to the format that you're going to need for, you know, all these idiots with their short attention spans to pay attention to what's going on. It's just not going to happen.
No, it's a different mindset now, and unfortunately, we won't see a lot of the strategy that we used to enjoy seeing over the years.
So, yeah, you know, because that, you know, like that kind of popped into my head when they were talking about it, and obviously, like you said, depending on who's at the plate. I mean, like if I have a left-handed pull hitter up, I'm not asking him to bunt. You know, just go ahead and take your wax and see if you can move the guy over. But, yeah, I mean, you know, if you get, you know, the right guy, and, I mean, I don't even care if he's one of your big power hitters, you get me that guy to third base, you know, and let me win the damn game, because what's going to be important in a 60-game season is winning these games, not how many homers you hit.
Yeah, each game is amazingly important now, much more so than it's ever been in the past because of the short season.
So, yeah, and, you know, that's the thing that I kind of wonder, you know, if they're going to, you know, if they'll be able to focus on that, you know, will they be able to be, you know, I don't know, you know, smart enough probably isn't the correct term, but if they're going to make sure they're interested enough to realize that, you know, you can't have, oh, well, you know, we lost 8 out of 10. That's okay. There's 162 games. Can't do that this year. You lose 8 out of 10, and you know, your season just slip away.
I could see where some teams that are bona fide contenders will be out of playoff contention in the first 2 or 3 weeks of the season if they get up to a slow start. It'll be almost impossible for them to make up that lost ground if they run into a slump when the season first starts.
So, yeah, and, you know, that, you know, and that's the thing, you kind of wonder about, and you know it's going to happen to somebody. You know, I mean, like, we mentioned it before, you know, the Nationals were 19-31 through the first 50 last year.
That's right.
So.
Yeah, if they started out that way, they would even wind up, no matter how well they played, they wouldn't wind up over 500.
You know, right, yeah, I mean, if you. You know, I think honestly, you've got to worry if you start off 20-20, you might not be in a position to, you know, or you're going to have to really, you know, really play well. You might have to go 15-5.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking also. Yeah, maybe win 75% of their remaining games. It'll put you at 35 wins, and based upon the Petco situation, they would at least qualify a team for the playoffs. If they got up to 35 wins, but they would have to win, as you pointed out, 75% of their remaining games, and that's not easy to do.
So, you know, that's going to be that's one of the things I'm kind of interested to see how, you know, they you know, teams work this out or teams look at this, because I don't know.
It'll be tough on the managers, don't you think? It's going to be very difficult on the managers this season, more so than ever before, because each game is so meaningful.
Yeah, you've got to think it would be. You know, I mean, this, you know, this is very important, and, you know, I mean, you especially got to kind of wonder, you know, with a guy like, you know, David Ross, who's never managed. You know, of all the years to get your first year, you know.
Yeah, it's not easy.
Here you go.
And what about some of these managers that are on the bubble, for example, in they have a bad season in 60 games, would they actually terminate them, or would they say, that's not fair, we'll give you one more year to see if you can turn things around?
Yeah, you know, it'll be interesting to see how teams handle that, with those guys. Because, yeah, I mean, you've got to wonder, we had a horrible year, and now we've got to, we've got to figure out, am I keeping this guy? Is it just, 60 games and we didn't do well? Is he worth keeping around? So, yeah, I don't know. It'll make for some interesting, some interesting off season along with all the other, BS put up with. Because the first thing we're going to have to listen to is the players complaining that the owners are colluding because they're not getting their big money deals anymore.
No, and were you surprised that they came out with the actual schedule for next season so soon?
Yeah, I was really surprised, but then I kind of realized that they needed the distraction. It's almost like they're just trying to give people something to look forward to.
Yeah, that's true.
We have this fiasco going on right now, but hey, look what we've got coming up. So.
Yeah, and the way things are going, we just hope that that actually happens next year. And things will be better all the way around, so that we can actually look forward to a full season of baseball and all the other major sports as well. And right now it's still an iffy situation.
Yeah, and the plus that, baseball obviously has over football and hockey right now is hopefully, as long as things get semi back to what we're used to doing, they would have the opportunity to start at their regular time. There's no chance the NBA or the NHL starts when they normally would this year. I saw, hockey's talking about December 1st to kick off what would be, next season, their 2021 season. And the NBA hasn't even really suggested anything. There was one suggestion for Christmas, but I don't think that was made by anybody inside the NBA. I think that may have been the inside sports writer who threw that date out there.
Yeah.
At least baseball could get back to some normalcy. I also think that kind of helped. That's another reason they put the schedule out was, hey, look, remember, this is what we used to be like.
Yeah, exactly. And you mentioned December 1st, that they want to start the hockey season December 1st. Now, that's not that far from where they regularly start. Don't they start sometime in November, mid-November?
October.
Do they start in October?
October. They normally start a little bit before Halloween. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I thought they started a little bit later in hockey as compared to basketball, but I guess not. Well,
they added a few extra days off in for those guys too, because I guess the hockey players saw that the basketball players get, 10 to 15 days off between games, and they wanted a couple extra as well.
Yeah, I'm sure they look at the salary comparisons, and I wonder how they feel. They probably are paid the least out of any of the – well, no doubt about it. They're paid the least out of any of the four major sports.
Oh,
yeah. United States.
So, they're also the least popular of the four. So, they don't have they're not breaking in the television money that, the other ones are. Otherwise, they could get paid a little more.
Yeah. Of course, certain markets are very, very – hockey is very popular and very, in some of the major markets like Boston and – Chicago and some of the other cities where they draw capacity crowds every game, but not every arena
that. The Canadian teams do fairly well. I know there are a couple that struggle, but some of them are in kind of small cities. It's surprising, that some of these, some of those teams are able to go there. But obviously they did better than like Atlanta, who had to move their franchise, I think, back to Winnipeg. Because,
Certainly, Winnipeg is a small market team, right? They would be considered
yeah,
a small market team, and I don't know. I think Vancouver may be a little bit bigger than Winnipeg. I'm not really sure, but they're certainly not a super major city either in terms of attendance. Ottawa also.
But you know, like in and Atlanta is just such a weird sports town, anyways. I don't know what possessed the NHL to think that they could put a team there and it was would draw, because they don't go to see winning teams in Atlanta. You know, the Braves can't sell out. So,
how many
the
years
South
in a row
did
the Braves win? What are they, 7, 8, 9 years in a row they won a division in their heyday?
Yeah.
And they still didn't draw and sell out, except when the playoffs started.
Yeah, you know, and the Falcons went to the Super Bowl 3 years ago and they still had trouble drawing.
Yeah. So why they would put a hockey team in there, into that market there, I could never figure out.
No, but, you know, I mean, you know, something possessed them. You know, they probably thought, oh, big city, you know, we can take advantage, you know, of something, you know, going on. And, you know, it just didn't work. And, you know, you sent it back to where they belong, you know.
Yeah.
Where somebody's going to care and watch. So...
But
if things do finally get straightened out, you know, baseball wants to go back to Montreal, so they're probably going to have to go Montreal and someplace else. The question is, where is that someplace else going to be? So.
Yeah, I can't think of another city where they would play, and if they wanted to go back to Canada, besides, of course, Montreal, and. Did they draw that well when they were at Jerry Park? I don't think they drew all that well. That's why they left.
No, well, you know, they left because they were playing in that crappy Olympic Stadium as well. But now, you know, they have a new facility, you know, and they believe that, you know, if they go back, they could draw. But I did hear, I don't remember, one of the Carolinas kind of popped up. I don't remember if it was North or South. As a possibility on where that other team could go. So I guess that would be an option.
Yeah. And that seems to be a burgeoning area for sports, North Carolina. So they seem to be amenable to having some top teams coming into that area. And they seem to
work. Yeah. I mean, you know, has always done well there. You know, they get nice support, but, you know, you always kind of question, will they support a pro team?
Yeah, that's the thing they have to take into consideration.
You know, because, I mean, you know, like the NBA got, you know, I think they got kind of lucky when they moved, you know, the Supersonics to Oklahoma. You know, that was a big risk, but, you know, it's worked out. I mean, they're the only professional sports team there, and the fans have really supported them. You know, that could have went bad, and they could have been looking very quickly to get them out of there.
Yeah, they've always seemed to have a respectable team, too, always a team that is with a winning record, maybe not going deep into the playoffs, but at least the fans show their support for a team that was a winner from the get-go when they moved there.
Yeah, you know, and you do wonder, you know, if it's your only pro sports team, why wouldn't you support it? But... I guess there's reasons.
Yeah. Well, I think Las Vegas is doing pretty well with their hockey team. They have a very strong team, and I think they've been selling pretty well over there.
Yeah, and we'll see how the Raiders do here shortly, if they'll be able to let fans in the stands. So.
Yeah, you're talking about that. Of course, I saw where there some teams are still considering piping in crowd noise to some of these games.
Yeah, I can't remember. One of the players just came out and said he thought that would be really stupid, and he hopes they didn't do it. I don't remember who it was, but yeah, I just don't. Why bother? I think one of the issues they're worried about, and I heard them mention this with the NBA broadcasts. Is the language. You know, the networks are a little concerned about what kind of language is going to leak out with these guys. So.
Yeah, it won't be obliterated by the crowd noise. So they do have to be careful. Like maybe they'll have meetings before the season starts, telling your players to be a little careful.
Even so, you know that's not going to stop these guys, especially the NBA guys. They don't care. You know, they're going to do and say whatever they want because it's a players' league, and you know they know there's nothing the league's going to do to them.
No, and that's the way it's been, and that's the way it's going to be. But it'll be nice to see some pro sports on TV finally, don't you think?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's going to be nice to get, you know, some, well, team sports. I mean, obviously we've had the other individual type sports. You know, golf has been on now, and, you know, NASCAR, even though they have teams, it's really, you know, something that they can they can manage, and I think they're doing a good job with it. So, but yeah, it's going to be nice to see the big sports back.
It will, because it certainly is. I think it's taken its toll on everybody now. We're 3 months into what would have been the baseball season already, and it's tough. It's tough to find something to do at night sometimes when there's not a ball game to watch.
Yeah, well, you know, you get so used, you know, I mean, we're kind of creatures of habit, so we get so used to, you know, oh, yeah, well, the ball, I'll just watch the ball game. Well, you know, it's not on. What am I going to do? And, you know, unfortunately, there's just not very much good TV out there. So,
yeah, and with all those channels you have available to choose from, you think there's at least one or two things that you can watch that would be interesting.
So, yeah, it's, you know, it's hard to find something, you know, and especially now, I mean, we're in rerun season anyways.
Yeah.
So.
And by the way, you're talking about sports. There is the G channel, which shows horse racing, both flat thoroughbreds and harness racing. We'll check that out from time to time. And I'll tell you a couple of channels I found that have been very interesting. I don't know if you get this on your system. AHC and the military channel. A lot of stuff about World War II, and some of it's in color. And it's a very depressing subject, but very, very fascinating to watch. So I don't know if you've ever seen any of those programming.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I've seen some of them. It's not the last thing I need is to be, you know, I can't, you know, I don't need to be watching anybody depressing. So,
yeah.
You know, that's the last thing to deal with. So, but I was kind of looking at stuff, and how's this for a funny stat, especially in today's baseball? I'm sure you remember former Cub Bill Buckner, who, you know, ended up when he went to the Red Sox, made the error everybody still talks about.
Yeah, sure.
You ready for this one? In his career, Buckner played a career 2,517 games. Believe it or not, he never struck out twice in a single game. Is there anybody in today's game that could say that just from last season?
I can't think of one person. I didn't know that stat, but that's impressive. That's impressive.
But yeah, just you know, obviously, again, you know, there's not much to watch, so I find weird stuff like this because I don't have, anything going on.
I told you on the other side of the spectrum when you're talking about that, then I don't know if you remember a ball player, Don Hoak, H-O-A-K. He played for a few teams, good ball player, but he played for the Cubs one game, and he batted six times against six different pitchers, and he struck out every time. That's an interesting stat, huh? Don Hoak, H-O-A-K. He was better than that, obviously. But
yeah,
that had to be a major embarrassment for him.
Yeah, again, you can find these, you know, fun little facts when you're, doing this kind of stuff. But, yeah, I thought, because I always kind of compare it to, like, you know, today's game, and I'm thinking, man, you know, how many guys have I seen strike out, you know, two and three times in a game? And, you know, here's a guy who won a whole season and didn't strike, never a whole career, never struck a game.
Another player that was very hard to strike out was Nellie Fox of the White Sox. He would drive you crazy up there, just getting two strikes on him, and they foul out 8 or 9, 10 pitches in a row. And Eddie Stanky of the Brooklyn Dodgers was another player that was like that. Very difficult to strike out. They would always try to put the ball in play, foul the ball off until they got a pitch to their liking, or else they always finally get a base on balls. Not too many players do that anymore.
Nobody does that anymore.
Yeah, right, zero. I guess the stat is zero on that one, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, even with 2 strikes, the guys are all 500 feet. You know, they're not looking for any kind of contact or anything. They want that home run, and they're going to get it one way or the other. They're either going to go down swinging, or, you know, they might get lucky and hit one. But yeah, it's kind of sad that the technical aspects of the game of baseball are just pretty much gone.
Yeah, I mentioned to you about Ted Williams, one of the greatest hitters in the game. Always said in a very interesting interview one time, he said when he gets 2 strikes on him, he concedes something to the pitcher, and he won't go through this huge home run swing anymore. He'll try to put the ball in play somewhere, unless he really gets a cookie. But if a great player like that, one of the great hitters, maybe top 5, 6, 7 hitters in the baseball history, will say something like that, you think that something like that would maybe sink into the modern day player? Not going to happen, is it? No way.
Yeah, it just doesn't, you know. Well, you know, that, you know, like I realized that all this sabermetrics and analytics was just a complete joke when they rated Tony Gwynn as one of the weakest hitters in baseball, in the history of baseball.
How would they possibly say something like that?
You know, there was a whole breakdown on, you know, how hard you hit the ball and where you hit the ball and, the exit velocity and the launch angle and all the garbage they use now. And, yeah, he came in as the weak – I believe he was actually the weakest hitter in baseball history. So, yeah, let that sink in and try to tell me that these stats actually matter now.
Yeah, well, all that matters is are the people who pay attention to that stuff and actually think that it actually will go into the game and they'll get an advantage by doing sabermetrics. And what a joke!
Yeah.
To say a player of a caliber of Tony Gwynn is one of the weakest batters in history is something that it's not even worth discussing. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, you know, first ballot Hall of Famer had 3,141 hits. What is it? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years of 200 or more hits in his career, won 8 batting titles.
And did he play for just one team? Did he just play for one team? I'm trying to remember now.
20 years with the Padres.
Well, it shows you that sabermetrics may not be as accurate and as illuminating as some people think it is.
So, yeah, and then the other funny stat I saw the other day was, do you know that if a player started today, he could get 200 hits for 21 seasons and still not catch Pete Rose?
Sure. Yeah.
just think about that. When you kind of start adding that up, 21 years with 200 hits, and you wouldn't be the all-time hits leader in baseball.
Yeah, he as Rose always said, he was one of the best single hitters in the game.
Yeah. So, you know, you do kind of wonder what, like, a guy like him would be looked at, or Tony Gwynn or Rod Carew. You know, these guys who weren't great power hitters, you know, how would they be, you know, assessed in, like, today's game? Well, I mean, you know, would you really downgrade these guys for lack of power? You know, like, I have Gwynn's numbers up here, and he only had 5 out of the 20 seasons he played in the majors. He only had double-digit home runs. He never hit more than 17 in his career. But he's a .338 lifetime hitter.
I'll take a 338 lifetime hitter with limited home runs anytime.
Yeah. You know, I mean, would these idiots actually dare to downgrade a guy like that because, you know, he's only going to give you 7, 8, 9 home runs a year?
And even with a limited amount of home runs like that, I would imagine that his RBI total was pretty damn good every year.
Yeah, you know, he had some, you know, some solid years. You know, I know the other guy here, let me double check here. This one's even better. Rod Carew spent 19 years in the majors. He's a career 328 hitter. He has 3,053 hits, but he only broke double digits in his career in home runs twice. He hit 14 twice. Do you kill Rod Carew because he's just not a power hitter?
Well, years ago, the players with averages like that were thought very highly of. Unfortunately,
yeah,
it doesn't hold this way anymore, and it's a shame when you think about it.
So yeah, I mean it's just the saddest thing. Carew actually has more triples in his career than home runs. I don't know how many guys can say that.
Well, that's an interesting stat, huh? You don't see that too often, do you? That's an incredible stat.
You know, yeah, it's just, you know, and again, you know, here's another guy who walked more than he struck out in his career, which we'll never see again in today's baseball.
And what did he average in his prime years in RBIs? Did he go between 80 and 100? 80 and 100 at least every year?
He got 101 year. You know, he was a leadoff guy most of his career, so he doesn't have huge totals. But it looks like he was always, you know, 50, 60 in that kind of area, which, you know, is about average for a leadoff hitter.
But I'm sure he scored a lot of runs during the course of his career.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He always scored a ton of runs. And, you know, don't forget, he was actually an MVP in 1977. I mean, he just had a phenomenal year. When you look at his numbers, he had 128 runs scored, 239 hits, had 16 triples, a 388 batting average. So, yeah.
So are you telling me this? Let me give you a scenario. Guy in AAA hits 355, but he only hits 9 home runs, and he drives in 80 runs. Did they bring it to the majors anyway?
You know, I mean, it would make sense, right? I mean, he sounds like a pretty good ball player. He's just
not
a home run hitter. You know, in today's game, you know, they scoff at that stuff. So who knows what they would do?
Yeah, and I guess the days of the 340, 350 hitters who aren't long ball hitters are gone. I mean, no one plays the game that way anymore. And it diminishes from the game. I mean, what is more exciting than a triple? I mean, you know, it's a lot more exciting than a home run anytime.
Well, you know, I mean, what's more, you know, I mean, just having a good hit is exciting, you know, instead of just watching a guy hack away and go down on strikes.
Yeah, yeah. And we've seen some good at-bats and some over the years, I'm sure. Even recently, I've seen some guys...
The podcast is available to you.